Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome to Shared Weight, the story of veterans of the Vietnam War from all sides of that conflict. On March 19, 1969, First Lieutenant Homer Steedley Jr. turned a bend on a trail in Pleiku Province, Vietnam, and came face to face with a North Vietnamese soldier. A split second later, Homer's bullets smashed into the chest of a 25-year-old medic named Hong Nhat Nam. Nearly 40 years later, in May of 2008, Homer stepped into the family home of the man he had killed 40 years before. He was warmly welcomed. How he got to that moment in his life is the story that reminds us of the terrible price of war on soldiers and their loved ones, and reveals the way healing can occur not by forgetting war's hard lessons, but by remembering its costs. Join us for Wandering Souls Come Home, produced by the Center for Emerging Media. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and the latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advancing stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-492-5538. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome to another episode of Shared Weight, the story of veterans of the Vietnam War from all sides of that conflict. This program is the final episode of the story of the Wandering Souls. On March 19, 1969, First Lieutenant Homer Steedley Jr. turned a bend on a trail in Pleiku Province, Vietnam, and came face to face with a North Vietnamese soldier, his weapon slung over his shoulder. A split second later, Homer's bullets smashed into the chest of a 25-year-old medic from the village of Thai Giang. His name was Hong Nhat Nam.
This was about 10 or 11 in the morning, and it was sunny by then. It was just at the point where it was starting to get really hot. We're probably 90, 95 degrees. And all of a sudden, like I say, I turned around and there he was. And strangest thing, at first it was almost surreal. I mean, we're all in green fatigues, you know, muddy and sweaty and really looking like guys in the field. Here this guy comes around the corner. He's got on light khaki uniform, clean light khaki pith helmet. I mean, he's like I just came out of an award ceremony or something. I must be hallucinating. The heat's gotten to him, you know.
The encounter lasted only a few seconds.
My total abject fear of that moment, I just cut loose and a couple of rounds stitching through the chest and just killed him instantly. I mean, I could look in his eyes. We were so close together. We were probably 30 feet apart. And then later I look at him and he was so young. I mean, he was a kid. It kind of warped my mind there for a while. But it's a chance encounter. You know, there were two of us. We both panicked and one of us walked away alive. And I'm sorry he's dead, but I'm glad I'm alive.
Nearly 40 years later, in May of 2008, Homer stepped into the family home of the man he had killed 40 years before. He was warmly welcomed. The story of how he got to that moment in his life is the story of the grace and courage of a soldier who returned the soul of the man he killed to that man's family, and the grace and mercy of a Vietnamese family that took an American veteran into their hearts and let their gratitude at the closure he brought to their story overcome their need to hate him for the death that he had caused. It is the story that reminds us of the terrible price of war on soldiers and their loved ones, and reveals the way healing can occur not by forgetting war's hard lessons, but by remembering its costs. Homer arrived in Vietnam in August of 1968, a young farm boy from Bamberg, South Carolina, a fresh-faced officer all of 20 years old. He was stationed with his unit in the Central Highlands, near the borders of Laos and Cambodia. The day he killed Dom, he was on patrol along a trail that cut through the triple canopy jungle. Homer had stopped his men to take a break when Dom appeared on the trail. After their encounter, Homer stared down at the young man he had just killed. Then he bent down and felt through the pockets of his uniform. There was a notebook with the neatest delicate writing, intricate anatomical drawings, poems, and what looked like identification papers.
I didn't know. I mean, I just thought there would really be a really good keepsake or memento of the war, you know, just to show that the kind of people we were facing. And I sent them back. When I got them back, I sent them back to Mom, and I told them, put these away somewhere safe because these are important, you know. And by the time I got back to the States, I was so stressed out that I didn't want to think about Vietnam. Just completely forgot about those documents.
Homer went through two combat tours, became an infantry company commanding officer, saw and dealt much death. When he returned to the States, like so many veterans, he felt isolated because of his experiences, the horrors he had witnessed, the men in his command who had been killed, and those he had killed himself, particularly that young man on a jungle trail into whose eyes he had stared. He was physically back, but not able to really return home, a wandering soul himself. At times, he tried to speak to people.
Friends eventually start coming around and want to know about Vietnam and all that, and you start talking, and the next thing you know, you look around, and they've gotten quiet and they've left because you said something that shocked them so bad, they don't come back.
Like many veterans, Homer suffered from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, before it was really understood. He often felt angry and isolated, and his circle of friends shrank. But in 2002, he met a woman, T.B. Dozier, at the university where he worked. She was the daughter of a World War II general and knew what soldiers lived through and was willing to listen to the horrible images that still haunted Homer. With Tibby's support, Homer was able to confront his memories of the Vietnam War. He started a website where he detailed his experiences in Vietnam and began to connect with other veterans. But there was still a missing piece, something haunting Homer that he didn't even know was there. The memory of that incident would start his real homecoming from the war. It began after a phone call from his mother.
My mom was cleaning out the attic at her place and found lots of stuff. She had kept all the letters I'd sent her from Vietnam. And she says, I got some stuff here that looks like drawings, medical drawings, and it looks like it's written in Vietnamese that I think you sent while you were over there.
And I realized that I wanted to try and get those back to whoever they belonged to, just simply because it belonged to them, you know, and it'd probably be the last thing they had from that individual. So I was really interested in getting back. I had no idea how I was going to do it.
Eventually, Homer got in touch with Vietnam veteran and writer Wayne Carlin, who told the story to his friend, Vietnamese journalist Phan Thanh Hao, who was able to get the story into a Vietnamese newspaper. Not more than 2 days after it was published, the family of Hong Nhat Dam, the young man that Homer had killed, surfaced. Dam's older sister, Tom, had been stunned.
I remember that day. A relative came by just before I went to work and gave me the newspaper. When I read the article, I could not stand. I collapsed when I read his name. And I told my husband, Dam has returned.
To the Hong family, as to 300,000 other Vietnamese families, Dam had become a wandering soul. They knew he'd been killed, but his remains had never been found or returned, and his spirit, like Homer's, could not find rest. To them, getting his documents back meant his soul would come home. They understood finally what a fortune teller had told their mother before her death.
I remember what my mother said after she came back from her consulting with the fortune tellers. She said that many of them told her that Dam was still alive, but he was living in a very far place in a foreign country, and that he would come back in glory.
So we encouraged her to believe that and not to think about it too much. And we even attended seances, during which Dam would appear and always say he was very sad and cry. We thought that he was sad because his wife had gotten married again, but he only said, I'm very sad.
The family, two surviving brothers, another brother Chi had also died in the war, and three sisters, wanted Homer to come to Vietnam to bring them their late brother's documents in person. They had no bitterness or anger, they said. They understood it was war and were grateful that he had preserved the documents, their only link to their brother. But Homer refused. He had neither the money nor the courage to face them. So in his stead, in May of 2005, Wayne Carlin took the documents to Vietnam and in an emotional and moving ceremony presented them back to the family.
Along with the documents, Homer sent the following letter.
I'm very touched that you have an altar that keeps Dan's memory alive. It hurts to think of the hundreds of thousands on both sides of that tragic war who still mourn the loss of their loved ones. Sometimes the guilt of surviving can be overwhelming. What will I say when I enter into eternity? Is there a little-known footnote to the commandment, thou shalt not kill, that forgives killing in combat? Look what I did in the ignorance of my and folly of my youth. I thought I was a true patriot, so why doesn't that give me comfort at age 59? Dan and I met by chance on a trail. He and I saw each other, and both of us attempted to shoot the other. I lived, he died instantly. For over a quarter of a century, I've carried the image of this young body lying there lifeless. It was my first kill. I wish you could say it was my last. Why did a medic die and I live? I don't know. Maybe someday humanity will have the wisdom to settle conflicts without sending its youth to kill strangers. People should know what our leaders are doing when they resort to armed conflict to solve political problems. In my dying moment, Dan and many of his comrades will surely call to me. I'm not afraid, only sad. Perhaps we will meet again as friends. Respectfully, yours, Homer.
But the family still wanted Homer to come visit them, to truly lay the war to rest.
We wish Homer and his family good health, and our family would like to thank him and his family for their keeping of my brother's documents for 36 years, and they kept them completely intact. I always tell my brothers and sister that even we may not have been able to preserve them that way. Homer kept them whole. With our stain or tear, through war, fire, and time. And if, after he killed my brother, he did not pick up the documents, then we would never have seen my brother's documents again. But after killing my brother, Homer's human feelings arose, and I remember reading the article in which he said that my brother was too young, and in just the blink of an eye, he shot. You know that, in wars, everything happened within a few seconds, and afterwards, even if he had regrets, there was nothing he could do. I read Homer's diary about that many times, how he had given the documents to his mother and how they haunted him, so that now that he cannot come here, we all sympathize. And we want him to come here and not worry about anything. It is just that now he and our family have some connection.
I'd like to go back just to have a little closure for myself, to remember Vietnam in a non-combat way. And I would like to meet Dan's family. I'd like to meet them face to face and just let them know how deeply sorry I am that it happened. And hopefully they'll meet me and get to know me a little bit and realize that I'm not quite an evil demon like they might have thought at one time. I look forward to it.
It wasn't until 2 years later that Homer decided he had to complete the process he had started to bring both himself and the family to peace. On May 20th, 2008, accompanied by Wayne Carlin, veteran Doug Reese, and producer Jessica Phillips, Homer stepped back into the Vietnamese soil for the first time since the war. The heat in Hanoi was just as Homer remembered, but otherwise, being in Vietnam for the first time since he was a young soldier was proving to be easier than anyone could have expected.
I'm surprised at how comfortable I feel with the people here. I've met some really great people, and I'm not the talkative type. I don't normally engage in random conversations, you know, and yet I feel perfectly comfortable talking with people around here. They're very friendly and very open, and I don't have any trouble at all conversing with them. I think probably for the Vietnamese, they've been involved in conflict for so long that everyone pretty much understands that when you go to war, you do things you don't necessarily want to do. And you regret it later, maybe, but it's done, and there's nothing you can do about it. And so I think maybe their forgiveness comes out of that, because a lot of them have done the same things.
Though Homer felt very comfortable in Hanoi, the real test would come. his comfort level would be challenged when the next day he would leave Hanoi for the small rural village of Thai Giang, where the family of Hong Yat Dam lives. When we come back, we'll follow Homer to Thai Giang to meet the family of the man that he killed. Then together they journey south to Pleiku to find Dom's remains and finally bring his wandering soul home to rest. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late, Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. Welcome back to Shared Waits' last episode, Wandering Souls Come Home. We rejoin Homer Steely in Hanoi as he describes his feelings before arriving in Thai Giang to meet the family of Hong Yat Dam, who he killed 40 years ago during the war.
I'll probably be a basket case once I get there. I'm sure the emotions are going to well up. But that's good. I need to get that to the fore. I've been suppressing all that for 40 years, so it's time to bring it out and let it have its course.
Wayne had his own apprehensions. How would the family react to Homer's presence?
I was pretty tense because I was not sure how he was going to react to actually meet the family of the man that he'd killed. And we'd talked about it, and he'd always said he was comfortable with it. It was okay, but we both knew that the physical fact, you know, coming face to face with his family was going to be something that would raise emotions that none of us could predict or control. So the day we went out to Taizhang, we were all a little nervous. We drove out from the city and into a different world, because when you leave Hanoi, you're really going out into the Vietnamese countryside, the eternal part of Vietnam, the rice paddies and so on. And also, it's farm country, and he's a farm kid. He connected his fields at home to the fields that he was seeing around him. He was kind of astonished to see things like seed shops, and then would think, oh yeah, of course there should be a seed shop here. And then it became more personal because he saw people working in the fields and started telling me that he was thinking about, well, this is the work Dom would have done. This could have been him out in the field.
The van continued and soon came to the People's Committee House in Thai Giang. Here, Homer and Wayne met the village chairman and left a wreath at the memorial to the war martyrs. Then, it was time to meet the family. Homer carried a tray of fruit as an offering as he walked down the alley to the Hong House. Before he could even see the crowd, he could hear their wailing. As he rounded the corner and came into the family courtyard, dozens of eyes were watching. The faces of the women were crying. The men were solemn and stony-faced. Homer entered the family home and approached the altar with his tray of fruit. He set it down, lit incense, bowed his head. A picture of Dom sat on the altar.
Well, I looked at their faces and you know, my voice cracked and tears flowed, which is unusual for me. And then the other time that I, you know, really got emotional was when I was presenting the incense to the altar. And as I'm putting the incense up, you know, and I straighten back up, I look up and there's Dam looking right at me. And then I look to the right and there's his brother's picture, you know, also died in the war. And I tell you, the rest of the, we were there, what, an hour or two? And I kept, every time, it seemed like every time I'd break my concentration and kind of relax for a little bit, I'd turn and look around the room, and there would be Dam's eyes looking at me again. You know, it was weird. It's like we made eye contact the whole time I was there.
When Homer approached the altar,
and lit the incense, then everybody seemed to relax a little bit, but the screaming was still going on. And I looked over at the Dame, who I'd met before when I brought the documents back, and her face seemed just transformed. Her cheeks were beet red, her throat seemed swollen as if like something was bulging in it, and these sounds were coming out of her mouth. And I asked Kwan, who was our interpreter, what was going on, and he said that the family was saying that she was possessed by Dom's soul, and also the soul of Chi, the other brother who had been killed in the war. And they were telling them what to do, basically. One of the other sisters, Toy, who came on the trip with us, was actually recording what was coming out of Thi Dam's mouth. She screamed, stomped her feet, and we stood there for a while, just not sure what to do.
That actually didn't surprise me. I'm from the South, and I've my close friends of our family when I was young were all black people. And from time to time, when they're grieving, one of their family members will do the same thing. And so I've seen that several times. That's not surprising to me. It's a little scary every time it happens because you never know what's going to come out. I thought what came out through her was a very positive thing. I felt more sorrow, not so much for her as for all the other family members watching her.
I had envisioned a lot of things that would happen when Homer met the family. I hadn't envisioned this, so I was very nervous that maybe things were falling apart. But the demeanor of all the other people in the family around us was actually relaxed, and after a while we relaxed also.
As the sister calmed and the tension eased, Homer and the other Americans were offered food and drinks. The family then asked Homer to speak. As he did, tears welled in his eyes.
Yeah.
Ông này là Homer nha, mọi người cũng biết rồi. Ông rất xúc động nói với ông là cựu chiến binh biết
đấy. Got sent halfway around the world and wound up killing people that I didn't mean to.
Tất nhiên là tôi đã có giết một người nhưng mà đó được là điều không muốn.
And I've come here today to try to bring a little peace and resolution to the tragedy that all of us have suffered. And to honor all of them, all of the soldiers that died on both sides in that war. And to pray that we never have to pray that we never have to do something like that again. Accept my deepest apologies. I'm so sorry.
As the room relaxed and the family shared food with the Americans, Dom's brother-in-law, Dieu, a war veteran clad in his army uniform, proclaimed that every group needed a leader, and he would be the leader of this group. Before Homer's visit, the Hong family had consulted a famous medium to help them locate the remains of their brother, a common practice among Vietnamese families trying to locate the remains of their missing relatives. What we would do now, he told the group, would be to travel south together, to the old battlefields of Pleiku, in the cemetery Yan Yunpa at Azaban, where Dom's remains lay among the graves of 35 others, all unmarked. With the help of the medium, and because of Homer's presence, the Hongs believed they would be able to identify the correct grave, disinter Dom, bring his remains, and his wandering soul home to rest.
When we go, we're going to go try and look for the remains of Dom, and I hope we can find some remains and get them back to the village and let them kind of put a closure to this episode for themselves too. I can't put myself exactly in their position, because our society doesn't work the way theirs does. But the order in the family, where, you know, the eldest son pretty much runs the officially runs the family and all that. And since Dom's body was missing and they weren't sure whether he was alive or dead, then that hierarchy was kind of truncated. So this would bring closure to that. That'll be good. If I can in some way add to that, you know, and help them reach that point, then that'll help me. That'll make me feel better.
In the spiritual life of Vietnamese people, we believe in Sống Gửi Thác Về, which means that people who live in this life need to rest in their home soil after their death, so that descendants will remember and light incense for them, and we, the living, will be at peace. If we can't find his body, then we will forever have to think about that unfulfilled task, because according to our tradition, everybody has to go back to his place of origin to be buried.
After 19 hours of train and van travel from Thai Giang, Homer was plunged back into the area where he fought in Vietnam, the jungles and mountains of the Central Highlands. The Americans and the Hongs had split up into two different cars in the town of Khe Nong. The Hongs were meant to go ahead to Yagyun Pa Cemetery at Azaban, where the famous medium said that Dom's bones were buried. But the plan broke down. The Hongs had trouble with the cemetery officials, suspicious of the presence of foreigners, and the Americans were not permitted to come. Disappointed and doubtful, the Americans had to stay and play coup. They could do nothing but wait for the Hongs to return. The Hongs were disappointed also, but were determined to push ahead. At the cemetery, they stared at the 35 graves, counting the rows and sites until they came to the one the medium had identified as Dom's. His sister Thuy plunged her hands into its dirt.
We dug down into the grave until we reached a ceramic urn. It was full of dirt. We started to remove the earth from the urn until we were about halfway down and encountered a green nylon bag. My brother Kat and I started pulling the urn up from the grave, and then I started doing it myself, saying to my brother Dom, "I'm your little sister. Help me to get you out." I touched the urn again and felt it was a bit loose. So I yelled, "My brother is coming." I then removed all the earth from the urn and extracted the green nylon bag. I took my brother's bones out and we bathed him and then wrapped him in a red cloth.
In Pleiku, the Americans waited. Finally, they received a telephone call. "We have him. We have Dom," Kat said. A few hours later, the van pulled up in front of the hotel. Inside, all the members of the family were grinning broadly, and Kat jumped out and hugged Wayne and tried to lift him off his feet. "We have him." In Luong's hands was a cardboard box labeled Showerheads. It contained, he said, the bones of Dom. The family had had to store them inconspicuously because people might not let them on the train because of the fear of the dead. Dom's sister Thuy put her hands inside the sleeves of her shirt and held them up. The sleeves were caked with mud. In Vietnamese, she said, "I dug him up. I dug him up with my own hands." All that remained to do now was to drive to the coast and catch the train back to the north and bring Dom home to be buried in his village. But the Hongs told the Americans, the medium said, they have one more task. Somewhere along the road between Pleiku and the coast, they would need to stop someplace, bring out the box of Dom's bones, and perform a ceremony in gratitude to the spirits of the place that had released Dom. As they drove through the steep, jungled mountains and through the Mong Yong Pass, one of the bloodiest areas of the war and a place Homer had fought, the van pulled off the side of the road.
Why we stop here?
There was a 6,000-foot mountain to the right of the road and a small knoll ideal for a ceremony. The mountain looked like all the others on the road. Its only distinguishing feature was a single tree that towered over all the others along its ridgeline, themselves 50 or 60 feet tall. and an incongruous concrete retaining wall patched onto part of its base. But as the Hongs descended from the van, the spirits of the place seemed reluctant to let Dom go. First, Jessica noticed that the batteries in her recorder had gone dead. She went to the 24 new batteries she had brought for backup and found all of them were dead also. Then the Vietnamese television crew lugged its heavy equipment up to the knoll, set it up, and was immediately blown over by a sudden wind. But the family was not to be denied. The box is placed on a briefcase and then draped with a red and gold Vietnamese flag. On the top are placed the tandem frame photos of Dom and his brother Chi. Candy, chocolate, a bottle of whiskey are placed in front of the makeshift altar. These are things that Dom loved. And then as the Americans and the Vietnamese formed a semicircle, the Hongs cry and chant as they light incense.
I can't, I don't know it. And I'm waiting till I don't know it.
Homer, kneeling, looked around at the stunning scenery. He shook his head. It couldn't be. It wasn't until later, when Wayne asked him about the fighting he'd seen at that place, that Homer revealed the startling realization that had come to him at that moment. "No," he said, "you don't understand. That's where I killed Dom." The exact spot where they had seemingly arbitrarily stopped to perform the ceremony was the place where he had taken his patrol up to the ridgeline, where he would see, shoot, and kill Dom. A fact he slowly came to realize when he saw the retaining concrete wall and the huge tree on the ridgeline.
And as I was looking around, when I was looking across the valley and I saw that turn where the trucks were coming around, I suddenly remembered this is exactly where they put us down. Because what they wanted us to do was start in the valley, walk up the tail end of that ridgeline all the way to the top, and then walk the ridgeline to check to see if they were putting any emplacements up there for ambushes. And then the only guide we had to know where we were and what we covered on the ridgeline and what we hadn't covered was if you look at the top of the ridgeline, it's jungle, and there's bush 8 to 10 feet tall, and then there's trees, you know, 60 to 90 feet tall. And then there's this one tree up there that must be 110, 120 foot tall. Just one little tree by itself. Well, not little tree. It's a big tree. So we used that as a target to aim at when we went up. And we went up to that tree, and then we took a left and went down the ridgeline that way. And we were coming back. And that's when we run into Dom, and the encounter took place, and I shot him. When I realized that, I couldn't at first believe that it's just impossible, you know, that we would just arbitrarily stop at the exact place. But I kept looking around, and there's no other place in the valley that where the road and the valley and the ridgelines all intersect. I mean, it's got to be it. You've got the nice, big, tall ridgeline, about 5,000-6,000 foot tall, and all the trees are even, you know, and then there's this one scraggly tree sticking up a good 60 or 80 feet above all the other trees. It's amazing for us to stop at the exact spot where we started our patrol. Just, it was a little eerie. And we lit some incense sticks and burned those. And then the family members spoke a little bit, and we were all kneeling beside the remains. And then, of course, their emotions overflowed. And I'm sitting there, and it's almost like I'm not there, like I'm not part of it. I feel like all this is happening, and like I'm looking around, and I'm here, but I'm not here either. You know, it's like I can almost feel myself climbing back up the ridgeline. It's just like my mind's just doing 1,000 things at once.
As the ceremony wound down, Dom's brother Luong turned to Homer and spoke. The translator says, "He said that Dom thanks you. He said that Dom forgives you."
Homer had returned my brother's artifacts, and now Homer had come to accompany my brother back to his home. It was enough so that he could be forgiven.
We asked Homer how he felt hearing that the family had forgiven him.
It's nice to hear that. It's very nice to hear that. And I think anyone who's killed someone in combat face-to-face and has that personal connection, you know, "I killed you," will probably agree with me that you can try to forgive yourself, other people can forgive you, but the fact is, until the day comes when you meet that spirit yourself face-to-face and can make that connection yourself, you will never feel forgiven, because the only person that can forgive me is Dom.
He's the one I took everything from.
For 19 hours, Dom's remains were held in that showerhead parts box to avoid drawing attention. It sat under the window of the train compartment as Homer and the Huangs spoke quietly of what they had experienced. Finally, the train arrived at its destination, and Homer, the box now draped in a flag, carried Dom off the train. The next day, he would go to the village and participate in the final laying to rest. When we come back, we'll join Homer, Wayne, and the Hong family as they bring peace to Dom's wandering soul with a funeral ceremony in Taegyeong. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. In this month's issue, four teams of collaborators explore four very different visions of the city. It's the Urbanite Project, a special annual issue devoted to showcasing outside-the-box thinking from Baltimore's most creative minds. Urbanite is available at over 800 locations. Visit www.urbanitebaltimore.com for a list of drop locations. Welcome back to Wandering Souls Come Home. We rejoin Homer Steely as he contemplates what will take place during Hong Yak Dam's funeral the next day.
So, how am I going to feel about the funeral tomorrow? Very glad that it's coming full circle, that there will be closure for the family. Terrified about all the emotion. I'm scared of emotion. I have spent 40 years suppressing emotions. I didn't hate, I didn't fear, I didn't love, I didn't feel joy. For 40 years, I was a zombie. I was a robot. So when you ask me how I feel, I don't know. Sadness, yes, sadness. That's going to stay with me for quite a while after this, I'm sure. But at the same time, I feel this wonderful sense of peace. Like, I have done as much as I can do given that situation. Not that I'll ever forget it or ever stop trying to get the word out about this kind of thing, but I think I have accomplished what I would like to have accomplished in this situation.
Finally, the day of Dom's funeral, 40 years after his death, dawned.
Well, we got to the village about 5:30 in the morning. The town square was already crowded with people. They'd set up like a blue tarp awning for shade, but there were hundreds of people. Rows of chairs, people sitting, people crowding, many of them wearing the white headbands, which signify mourning, as if it's a funeral. There was a band with traditional instruments. There were many soldiers in uniforms, including the fatigues and pith helmets, which were so familiar to Homer, to myself, from the war. At the beginning of the courtyard, they'd set up a large altar and a casket. It's like a heavy ceramic box draped with the national flag with Dom's remains in it. They led us right to the front of the crowd, and there were chairs set up for Homer and the other Americans. And we sat there, and Homer looked, you know, his eyes were just fastened on Dom's photograph, which was on top of the casket. And what I noticed is his eyes were fastened there, and all these other people were just staring at him. This was the man that had killed Dom, and here he was. And we had one relationship with the family, but now this was the whole village. And, you know, I had had friends in Vietnam who said, you don't know what's going to happen. Maybe they'll throw stones. Maybe they'll, you know, a lot of people died in this village. A lot of young men like Dom. They had 142 that went to the American, that didn't come back from the American War. And most of them, they never knew what happened to. But instead of that, I found we were being cut with all these acts of kindness. People would smile, give us water. It was the same grace that the family had been displaying. All of the family were wearing black with these white headbands, and they stood and slowly one little group after another would walk up the aisle as the band, you know, played the traditional instruments, and they would leave they would light incense, joss sticks, on the altar. And there were speeches. A general made a speech. And at the end of it, Diu, Dom's brother-in-law, made a speech.
Diu's thank you speech, read by Hon Nguyen.
"44 years ago, my brother answered the call of the nation to join the army and went to southern Vietnam to fight against the Americans. 10 years later, in 1974, we were given the bad news that Ao Dam gave up his life in the Battle of the South. The memorial service was held by the Communist Party with just a paper of death notice without any of his belongings. 33 years after his death, my family, with his comrades' help, went to the Pleiku Forest in the hope that we could find him. But we had to come back without him because we didn't have enough information. 36 years later, in 2005, our tears continued when his belongings were sent back by the men who killed him in the war. Today, he comes back for the third time after 39 years. But it's the most perfect time. We are happy and proud to welcome his return. We would like to thank the commune's people and party who made our brother Hoàng Ngọc Đàm a brave soldier. Our thanks are also sent to the Vietnamese party and government who helped the American soldier bring my brother back to the fatherland. We are grateful to spirits in the forest and the rivers who revealed my brother's way to come home. Thanks to our friends, the American war veterans, for your goodwill in giving us information and giving his belongings back, as well as going with us to the former battlefield to pick up my brother. Thank you to an American mother, Mr. Homer's mother, who helped her son to preserve my brother's belongings over the last 30 years. Mr. Homer, you have tormented yourself over the things you did in the war. Our brother's spirit and our whole family forgive you and regard you as a friend. It's our Vietnamese traditional altruism and humanism."
After the speech, Diu looked at us, and then he called us up to the altar, and we took our place in the ritual. Then they asked Homer to come to the casket itself and be one of the pallbearers. And again, this is one of these moments that just stunned me, because it kept bringing me back to what we were doing and what he was doing. And the other pallbearers were all these young Vietnamese soldiers in their olive fatigues with their pith helmets. Again, the same clothing, the same uniform that Dom would have worn when Homer killed him. And the same age, you know, that Dom would have been when Homer killed him. And now they were bearing the weight of this casket, and Homer took the left corner of it, and he was bearing the weight of this man that he had killed. And we brought him out to the road where there was a funeral cart, very ornate, you know, dragons and carvings on it, and these poles on the side where you would push it. And Homer took one of the poles in the front, and then Ziu motioned for me to take the other one. We took it out to the road between the village and the cemetery, and it was about a kilometer. And it was a long kilometer. It was very, very hot. The sun was beating down, and there were hundreds of people. And we just pushed this slowly, and we were walking alongside the green rice paddies, the green rice fields. And Homer said to me later, you know, that he kept looking at those fields and thinking about the way Dom had worked in those fields, and the way he had worked in his own fields in South Carolina when he was growing up, when he was his age. There's a section of the village cemetery that was just for what they called the war martyrs. When we got there, they lowered the casket into the grave, and then again did something which startled me. They asked Homer to come to the grave and to be the first one to throw a handful of dirt into the grave. And he knelt by the grave, and he did that. And later, again, he said to me, he was feeling that earth that Dom came from, that he'd worked in his hand. And then they asked me to throw in the second handful of dirt. And then Dom was buried. He was brought to peace. I can hardly express that feeling. It was both great grief and great release and great joy, and that's what I was feeling. And for Homer, it was of course 10 times that much. When I asked him later how he felt, he said he felt serene. It was this incredible act of courage and grace on both sides, on Homer, who is bearing the weight of the grief and the physical weight of the man that he killed and the grief that he felt, and bringing that home to bring this family to peace and bring himself to peace. And the grace of this family that was so willing to understand what soldiers have to do and what goes on in soldiers' hearts, and to see this man not as killer, but as brother, as another soul that had to come home to rest.
Throughout this journey, a documentary crew from Vietnamese television was following Homer and the family. The film became a major hit on Vietnamese television, so popular that hundreds of viewers wrote and called in asking for it to be rebroadcast. The second time the documentary played, some viewers noticed something strange. In the scenes where the Hoang family is shown digging up Dom's body, the setting was all wrong. They were shown digging, but they were not at the military cemetery, where the fortune teller said his bones were located.
What the director had to admit, and then the family had to admit, was that they had not been able to get official permission from the authorities at the cemetery in Pleiku to dig up the grave, and therefore, I mean, basically, they snuck in and did it on their own. They hadn't wanted to say that, for obvious reasons, but also they didn't want to get the documentary director in trouble. They didn't want to get the people at the graveyard who they either convinced or paid to help them dig up the grave to do that. So they admitted that publicly, and in the end, Ziyu, the brother-in-law, said, "We did what we had to do. We brought Dom home, and I would have done it again."
The controversy also brought home the main question people had to ask. Had the family indeed found the correct remains? Wayne remains ambivalent about accepting that ending, though not about its meaning.
For myself, I mean, I always had, and still do, mixed feelings at some level about, you know, whether these are really the bones of Dom. I know the family believes that they are, and so does Homer. You know, as I say, at some level, so do I. At another level, what happened was that Homer and the family accomplished what they had to accomplish to bring themselves to peace. They had dug up the bones that they believed belonged to their brother, to the man that Homer killed, and they had brought them into the daylight, and they'd brought them home, and they'd commemorated them, and they reburied them, and they reburied them in peace.
For the family, there is no doubt, though, that Dom's remains actually were buried.
This story, to anyone who wasn't here, would sound like it's legendary, but it all happened. Only my family and Homer truly understand it. There was some mystical pull that disturbed Mr. Homer for the past 36 years, as he wrote in his diary.
I think Dom is a lot more powerful than I ever realized. I think he's been guiding this whole thing from beginning the day that I shot him. I think his very personality, the fact that he was so meticulous in his dress, the fact that he won awards like every year for years before I met him for his unparalleled performance as a medic, just everything about Dom from his very birth had an aura to it of greatness that hit me when I looked into his eyes on that trail. I remember it at the ceremony at the family's house, and again up in Mangang Pass at the ceremony. I can't keep my eyes off his photograph. Every time I see that photograph, my eyes just go straight to his, and it's like he's still alive. I mean, those eyes are alive in that photograph for me. They're the same eyes I looked into. I
I was only about 30 feet away, so when I shot him, I ran over to kick his weapon away. So when I first looked into his eyes, they were still alive. They were living eyes. I watched the life disappear. And yet when I look into the photographs of Dom, that's what I see. I see that sparkle. I see that vibrance. It's a kind of a comforting feeling. It's like he's saying, it's okay, I'm still here. I'm still doing things even though I'm not physically on this planet anymore. Through you, I'm still accomplishing things. And that's very gratifying. I think that's what this whole trip has been about. I'm damn surrogate. I'm doing his work for him. I think he's touched a lot of souls and will touch a lot more, even after death. And what greater epitaph can a man have? So I'm proud to be some small part in this great drama.
In Vietnam, you know, we have a certain spiritual relation that we call karma. We think that Dam was a sacred soul. He was so sacred that he could gather us together, all of us here, to do this thing, to meet today. So that is what we believe.
This program is dedicated to the men and women who fought in the Vietnam-American War, to those who died, and to those who are still missing in action, to the wandering souls of both sides. You can find the complete story of Homer Steedley and Hong Nhat Dam on our website, www.centerforemergingmedia.org. That's one word. Thousands of journals and diaries from the bodies of North Vietnamese soldiers, the fighters of the National Liberation Front, known as Viet Cong, are stored on microfiche at the National Archives. Some 9,000 have been returned to Vietnam through the Vietnam Veterans of America. This has been a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Executive producer, Mark Steiner. Producer and field recordist, Jessica Phillips. Written by Wayne Carlin, who's also our consulting producer. Editor and studio engineer, Andrew Epic. Studio recording and mixing at Clean Cuts Music and Sound Design. Special thanks to Homer and Tippi Steedley and the family of Hong Nhat Dam. Don An Quan and Ho Nguyen for translations from the Vietnamese. This production was based in part on Wayne Carlin's book, Wandering Souls, Journeys with the Dead and the Living in Vietnam. And for the Center for Emerging Media and all the men and women who have fought and suffered and died in all of our wars, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.